You should watch cricket. You'll enjoy cricket. I was sharing with some folks last night the first international cricket match was between England and America, and it took place in Hartford, Connecticut, before the Civil War. And now 46, 48 states in the United States have cricket teams. It's coming back. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. I don't know whether I've shared this story or not, but when I was a schoolboy, when school came to an end at 4 p.m., on a Friday, about every other week or so, I would walk across the school playing field to the local library. There, I would lose myself browsing the library bookshelves. There were all kinds of books. It was an Aladdin's cave of books. Books about things, about people, history books, story books, books even about books. And walking home from the library, I would invariably begin to read one of the books I had taken out. I seem to remember I could take about five. And of course, the fact that I was walking home somewhat limited the weight of these books, because it was quite a walk home. But I would always have this collection of different books, and anxious to get reading them. And invariably, on a Saturday morning, particularly a day like today, or a day if it was raining, I couldn't go out in the summer and play cricket. After my parents and my sister had left the house to go to work, I would snuggle down in a chair and I would read all day long. Until returning from work, at the end of the day, we would all muck in and prepare for supper. Sunday, of course, was the Christian Sabbath, a rest day. Although we were not a church-going family, I knew that. But there was something about those long Saturdays when I would read all day that has remained sacred to my memory. Of course, when I left school and started work, the weekend in those days was still a time we took off. We were supposed to work on a Saturday morning, Monday to Friday through Saturday morning, but we used to tag on half an hour a day so that we could stop on a Friday and have the weekend off. My boss didn't care as long as the work was done. Families in those days would maybe go and watch a cricket match, or a soccer match if it was winter. And during the summer, they would maybe go and catch a train to the seaside. It was a time of rest, a time when life seemed much slower then. No internet, no cell phones to consume the time. Even the traffic seemed to go slower. The cars and buses seemed to go slow. Most of the time, we moved around on our bikes or we walked. An hour seemed to last an hour. A day seemed to last a day, rather than the speed in which time seems to fly these days. And of course, except for the civic services, hospitals, airports, emergency services and the like, everything closed on a Sunday, the Christian Sabbath. I remember once having a conversation with Claire Landis, who ran the farm across the way. Claire used to tell me that every morning and evening, regardless of the day, he would have to go milk his cows. Cows don't take Sabbaths. He'd have to tend his crops. The fields don't wait for farmers. It didn't stop him going to church, mind. He was a good Mennonite, he and his family. They'd go to church twice every Sunday, morning and evening, in between milking his cows. The Sabbath with him was still a work day. The rhythm of my day changed, my life changed, when I started my career in aviation, like hospitals and police forces and farmers and the like. Civil aviation is a 7-day week, 24-hour-a-day business. When other businesses are closed, ours was working. My Sabbath then became a midweek day, rather like for some people who come to the midweek Wednesday service. They treat that day as their Sabbath. And even when I was promoted to the executive branch, my working week, which was supposed to be Monday to Friday, my weekends were increasingly spent catching up, being on call, being responsible. And clergy joke that, you know, we're only supposed to work one day a week, on the Sabbath. The reality, of course, is very different. Clergy live in the kingdom of anxiety, not only our own anxiety, we live in your anxiety as well. And that's a 7-day-a-week occupation. Now, what with cell phones, instant communication, emails, internet, the Sabbath has almost become swamped in all manner of activities. For most of us, I suspect, the Protestant work ethic dominates. Even on the Sabbath, we never switch off. And for most parents these days, the Sabbath is spent ferrying children from one activity to another, which is a work in itself. I could go on. What fascinates me is I suspect that the way we approach the Sabbath is not far removed from how the people in biblical times approached the Sabbath. Our lesson from the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, is taken from the farewell speech of Moses to the Hebrews before they entered the Promised Land. It's a code of life he gives them, a set of instructions on how they are expected to live. And he draws their attention to the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, that came down from Mount Sinai. And he focuses on that part about the Sabbath. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Which suggests they weren't. Which suggests that it was new to them. Which suggests they didn't have a code of life. Actually, if you wanted to really dig deep, the code of Israel comes from an ancient text called the Code of Hammurabi. It's a Persian text that the Persians used to control their lives. The Ten Commandments are almost identical. And by the time we get to Jesus' time, the lesson in the New Testament is taken from the Gospel of Mark, where Jesus is disputing with the Pharisees. I'm getting more careful now about how I say that. You know, there's one phrase, I don't know whether you ever saw the film Awakenings. It's a wonderful film. It took place many, many years ago. It's a true story. I've forgotten his name. Oliver Sacks, thank you. Oliver Sacks, about the man called Oliver Sacks, who was working with patients who had been in a state of, not a vegetative state, but a state of however you describe it, I don't know, walking coma, yeah. Well, he's having this dispute with one of his fellow doctors who clearly doesn't agree with him, and so Oliver Sacks says, you know, if you were right, I would agree with you. I've always liked that phrase, and so whenever I come across it in the New Testament, I think of Jesus sort of saying in an Oliver Sacks kind of a way to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, you know, if you were right, I would agree with you. Well, he's having one of those, if you were right, I would agree with you kind of conversations with the Pharisees about the Sabbath. Not about the sacred nature of it, everybody accepted that, but rather the rigor in which it was being enforced. It's one of the parts of human life, you know. If we don't do what we're supposed to do, the usual way is to add another law to make you. That's what the Hebrews did. If you read in the book of Genesis, when God finished the work of creation, God rested on the seventh day and declared it holy, a sacred time of rest and renewal. In their desire to keep that Sabbath day holy, the Hebrews had laden it with all manner of regulations, which in effect placed the cart before the horse. So that it seemed to Jesus that instead of being a time to reconnect with God and humanity, it had become an end in itself. Something humans were created to observe, rather than something created for humans to enjoy. And then there's that word, holy. The Hebrew word, kadesh. Holy. Kadesh means to set apart for a special purpose. Kadesh means to withdraw. The Sabbath, therefore, is meant to be a sacred time, set apart for the special purpose of reconnecting with God and with each other. One way to describe the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, is God in relationship with God's self. God in relationship with God's self and God's creation. So also is the Sabbath, a time to reconnect with God and with those in relationship with us. It's a sacred rest, preparing us for the eighth day, the day we return to our labors. But I have this feeling that nothing's changed. Nothing's changed from biblical times. The only thing that's changed is technology. My guess is, in biblical times, they probably were every bit as busy as we are. Because they didn't have supermarkets to go to. They didn't have all these things that we have. But they still had to live. So I suspect that their lives were just as crazy as ours. And I suspect that if they had a rest day, it was observed in name only. I came across something recently that said, interestingly enough, in ancient times, the only people who had a recognized rest day were Jews. Nobody else had. The law was unique. The Decalogue was unique. Nobody had a rest day. They celebrated the gods, but it wasn't necessarily a rest day. And it wasn't until the time of Constantine that the Christian Sabbath came into being. Some of you may have noticed I've taken to writing a return message on my email. I do it first thing after the services on Sunday. It's a response, it's a return email, which states that I am now on my Sabbath and will not be responding to my emails until I return to my office. I started doing it, not for you, for me. Because one of the things that rules our lives, certainly clergy, are emails. I remember once having a conversation with Bishop Baxter. We were talking about prayer and the daily office and how often we observe it in the breach, and I said, I'm going to wager, I'm not a wagering man, but I'm going to wager, Nathan, that the first thing you do when you open your eyes is check your emails. And he says, yeah. I said, I know. That's what I do. I want to know what's coming up in the day ahead before I pray. That's anxiety. That's fear. When what we should be doing is praying first and looking at our emails next. So I send this email out. Of course, the day off is never a day off. As we all know, we only work one day a week. But in my early life, the Protestant work ethic was driven into me. I'm a workaholic, and I admit it. I find it hard to take a Sabbath rest. And I look back in envy on those Saturdays I spent as a schoolboy, where I might read a book in a day. I'm not much given to church signs, as many of you know. You know the ones I mean, these big white signs that churches put on their lawns with usually some questionably theological pithy statement. You often find them on the internet. Someone will see one that's funny and it'll go viral. I passed one yesterday, not long after I'd left Sealingsgrove. And as I drove by, I thought, ooh, that one works. How fitting. It was very short. It read, "Tend your heart. It is God's garden." Tend your heart. It is God's garden. It could almost be speaking of our sometimes vain attempts down the ages to observe the Sabbath, to set it apart, to keep it holy, to be in relationship with God and relationship with our neighbor. And above all, relationship with ourselves. I like that phrase. I have a feeling I'm going to be using it a lot. Tend your heart. It is God's garden.
observe the Sabbath. Keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. Amen.